This is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
My name is Edward Escobar. I don't have health insurance currently, and I don't plan to get health insurance once the mandate is issued.
Hi, I'm Kwame Livingston. I do not have health insurance right now. It became expensive, and I don't really use it, even though I know I need to have it.
My name is Jersey Garcia, and I live in Pembroke Pines, Florida, and I do not have health insurance.
Three of the voices of more than 1 million people today living in South Florida without health insurance, and three who now can shop for coverage on the brand new state health insurance exchange that launched on Tuesday this week. That's our focus here this week on the Florida Roundup on WLRN. Some of those shopping will rely on navigators, people contracted with the federal government to help the uninsured wade through the complexities of health care coverage. Adrian Madris is one of those navigators working in Homestead.
We feel prepared, we've been trained, we've been certified, we've been licensed. So everything that we've needed to do up until this point in order to be prepared, we've done it.
Amy Driscoll from the Miami Herald has been leading the Herald's coverage, editing that coverage for many, many moons now. She joins us on the Florida Roundup. Kelly Kennedy from the Associated Press in Miami, also covering it from South Florida for the national perspective. And Stacey Singer from the Palm Beach Post joins us from Palm Beach. Ladies, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Your show, too. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 743-9576. Email us at thefloridaroundup@wlrnnews.org. What's your experience with these online exchanges? Have you had any trouble getting online? Has your employer changed his or her health care coverage because of the Affordable Care Act? Amy, let's begin with the technical glitches that greeted us on Tuesday. Are they all over with 96 hours and counting?
No, they certainly aren't. I tried again this morning and couldn't get on. I think I saw somebody on Twitter say we started with a whimper, not a bang, and I think that's pretty accurate.
What is behind these technical glitches? Is it the overwhelming demand being put on healthcare.gov, the 36 states, I think, that are relying on the federal government to run these state insurance exchanges, including Florida?
Well, that's what the Obama administration is telling us, that it's the overwhelming popularity that is bogging everything down. I'm not sure that's totally true. We're kind of trying to look into that right now. I tried to get on at something like 4:30 in the morning the second day and couldn't get on.
One would think then so, low traffic at 4:30 in the morning.
You would think. And so I think there may be some other stuff we're starting to look at, the way the computer systems talk to each other. Maybe one of the primary problems going on in addition to the overload of people all trying to get in at once.
Stacey Singer from Palm Beach Post, I know you've been looking at some of the technical backbone here. Is this just a matter of overwhelming demand getting pushed to healthcare.gov and a lack of perhaps a little bit of foresight on the part of the federal government and the kinds of demand that they anticipated in the first week?
Well, it's interesting. I've been speaking with some software developers and also looking at the web developer chatter on Reddit, for example. And what you see there is great skepticism of the administration's line that this is merely a heavy traffic problem. You're seeing discussion of some apparently fairly basic coding mistakes that have been made, according to the Reddit developers and according to my sources. There are fixes that can be done pretty quickly if the correct coding is in place, but that doesn't appear to be the case.
You know, for anybody who's gone through a software release, there traditionally is the beta release, right, which is the test release. We didn't see a beta release on this one, did we, Stacey?
Absolutely not. And the administration likes to compare themselves to the Apple operating system releases. But if an Apple operating system released with this many glitches, you'd see the stock price plummet.
Yeah. Kelly, Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius made that kind of analogy, saying, listen, you know, Apple was launched with the new software update for its iPhones, and there were some glitches in that, but you don't throw that away simply because there's a few glitches. You know, what are your sources telling you about some of these technological snafus, and is it putting people off on even going to the exchange over the next several months to take advantage of the open enrollment?
And I think you did hear the president use that same analogy as well. So the federal officials are really trying to play up the volume and the high interest and obviously sort of downplay the glitches. And I, like Amy was saying, you know, some of the problems seem to be more than high volume issues. For instance, when you get to the security questions on the drop down menu and it's either blank or they don't accept your answers, that seems to be you know, something in the design of it.
Right.
But of course, the feds haven't said that. They're not getting into it. All we're getting is, you know, the high traffic to the site and that they've increased capacity. Yesterday, I think they said they'd cut down the wait times by a third. But I think you bring up a really good question. Yes, there's so much excitement and there was so much buildup for so many months leading up to October 1st. Has this sort of discouraged people? And we're hearing from a lot of real people who tried to log in via the website and navigators. I talked to a navigator yesterday who said, I'm done. We're not even trying to enroll people again using the website until Monday.
This was a navigator who said this. Someone who's contracted with the federal government to help people wade through all of this, saying they're so frustrated, we're going to take the next 3 days off, and hopefully the government will have its act together on the next Monday. Wow. I mean, Amy, are we wound up having pushback? Is it one chance and done for some of these million South Floridians who are uninsured?
We're actually seeing kind of the opposite of that, that people are more than willing to wait. They know they can't get insurance until January 1st anyway. And some of the navigators were already prepared with some paper applications instead. The government has been sending people to the call centers and the live chats. I got to say, the live chat did not work for me again as of yesterday. So I don't know who's going to it.
It wasn't live and it wasn't chatty.
Right?
Yeah.
But we did actually talk to somebody who said that they had been able to enroll people on the site in Florida. So we know that some people are getting through. And we talked to a person who did it on his own as well. So we know that there are occasional people who are getting through. We just, what we don't know is how many people are going in there and not getting anywhere and getting discouraged.
Yeah, we do know a live chat that is working. It's on WLRN.org. It is curated by our web producer, Lane Chen. Join the conversation there at WLRN.org. And the conversation on the telephone, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. There's plenty of problems here, which we've articulated, but also the politics still remain in the foreground. And Matt Laszlo is joining us from Washington, D.C., our stringer covering Florida lawmakers in Washington. Matt, what are those South Floridian lawmakers saying about the first 96 hours of the rollout?
They're reporting a lot of the glitches we're hearing about from your reporters. And it's actually kind of interesting when you talk to Republicans, you get one thing, and with Democrats, another. Republicans are... We have to put this in the context of the government being shut down.
Right.
So what they're saying is they're actually hearing more complaints about quote-unquote Obamacare than they're hearing complaints about the government being shut down. Now, when you talk to Democrats, they're saying they're getting flooded with calls about the government shutdown, and they're getting praise about the rollout. So, you know, I guess everything in Washington these days is just utterly partisan. So it's hard to even divine what the truth is here.
Yeah, you've got to look at everything through the lens this week of the government slowdown, with the federal government, of course, closed with 800,000 people essentially furloughed with no known back-to-work date yet. And to that regard, in terms of what you're seeing and hearing from the rhetoric from South Floridian lawmakers, Matt, are they falling along party lines? Any hope of some of these folks perhaps trying to play peacemaker and looking for any common ground?
Well, it's interesting. Last weekend, when Republican leaders kind of unveiled, I call it their Plan C, but at this point, I don't know if it's D, E, or F, they we saw Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart, a Republican, actually buck the party leaders, and he basically said, no, our strategy isn't working. We're not going to be able to delay the Affordable Care Act for a year.
Yeah.
So he broke ranks with them. But then this week, Republicans unveiled a new strategy where they started voting to just open up certain segments of the federal government, starting with taking care of veterans, opening up the D.C. government. So now he's back on board with that strategy. So we'll see. The more calls they get, the more frustration they hear from voters, and the more this starts to actually pinch people. Because I think right now, a lot of us don't really realize what services we're not getting the government.
Yeah, the healthcare.gov, of course, launched with the technical problems, but it did launch despite the government slowdown. Our reporter in Washington, D.C., Matt Laszlo, joining us here on the Florida Roundup. Thank you, Matt. Now, of course, it's not just a federal government issue and debate. We've had a significant conversation here within the state of Florida for the better part of, 3 years now, I think, Amy, since the Affordable Care Act really kind of came up on the agenda in Washington. And, of course, Florida led the fight against the Affordable Care Act to the Supreme Court, and also has been dragging its heels and raising lots of questions about the implementation.
There's still so much uncertainty involved in this. And, you know, the technology is very, very complicated. And whether people can get accurate information about plans available and what federal subsidies exist or they qualify for, that's yet to be seen, how they're able to navigate this.
That's the Attorney General of the Sunshine State here in Florida, Pam Bondi, speaking on Fox News. Amy, the state has done very little. It outsourced this, so to speak, to the federal government. Is that a source of some of these problems that we're experiencing? Are the problems solely Florida or some of these big states? Is California experiencing it? California is a true state-run exchange.
Right. California is running its own exchange, and they apparently, we were able to get on their site and look at their plans from Florida. We can't get on Florida's site, we think, because it's part of the national, the federal-run exchanges, which are the ones that are having the problems. The state-run ones seem to be doing pretty well so far. We're not finding a whole lot of problems. There have been some early problems right away, but then they seem to be working those out. So I think, you know, we're looking here at the same problems that a lot of states are having that are on the federal exchange. And, of course, we have a governor who has been very open about not wanting this, the legislature not wanting this. You know, they've you know, tried to block navigators from going onto Department of Health sites where poor people would go and poor people who probably would be interested in getting insurance. So it's certainly not a secret that there's not a lot of cooperation between the state and the federal government on this.
Yeah, in fact, we did see pushback early a couple of weeks ago as we moved up to the open enrollment here, Kelly, where Broward County took a step forward and said, no, we're going to ignore the state health department directive and allow these navigators on to the county health department facilities. Miami-Dade County did much the same thing. Not necessarily unprecedented here, but certainly you've got a Republican leader in Broward County or a Democratic leader in Broward County, Republican leader in Miami-Dade, both going against the Republican administration here in Florida.
And we saw the same thing in Pinellas County as well. They did something similar. You know, I think there's this huge desire to get information and the facts to people and take away the politics of it. And, you know, I say that a little bit talking out of both sides of my mouth, because certainly the you know, in Broward, you have, you know, the mayor there who is a very strong Democrat and, you know, spoke out strongly against Governor Scott, who entered politics in 2009, mm-hmm. running a cable TV commercial criticizing, you know, Obama's health care plan.
Right. So, right. In the meantime, the Republican leadership in Miami-Dade has been more quiet about ignoring the state directive. Stacey Singer with Palm Beach Post. Go ahead.
One of the things I think is really interesting to think about here is the pent-up demand for insurance. It may be significantly larger than we even realize. The Kaiser Foundation estimates that only 63% of adults who qualify right now for Medicaid are actually enrolled. And that's in part because the states, especially Florida, make it incredibly difficult to actually be on Medicaid. The reporting requirements would blow your mind. I wrote about that recently. And when the healthcare.gov does get up and running, it creates a no wrong door system where technology will facilitate people's enrollment. So even if people don't qualify for exchange insurance, they may get funneled into Florida's Medicaid program. Florida could see its Medicaid costs skyrocket and that surplus might disappear.
And Stacey, get into this a little bit more. We're going to talk later on about the tax subsidies and the eligibility under the Affordable Care Act. But, you know, Florida, of course, in the last legislative session did not accept the federal expansion for Medicaid. So square that with your potential forecast of the state seeing its Medicaid expenses really skyrocket.
You're looking at potentially a million people who would have gotten coverage through expanded Medicaid who won't be getting it. But one in four Floridians has no insurance right now. It's unclear exactly how many people could qualify for Medicaid without the expansion. The state is only projecting 35,000 new people in their budgeting. I think they're off. I think they're off a lot, and I think they're going to be surprised next year.
We are talking about the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. We'll talk about the language of healthcare reform, healthcare insurance reform coming up. We did get a tweet at WLRN. Connie here sending us a note saying, I got onto the site, healthcare.gov, no problem, September 30th. Now, that's an interesting date, right, here, Kelly and Amy and Stacey, because that was the beta test, Stacey, if there ever was one, but you couldn't actually see the plans or the prices.
That's right. You couldn't shop for insurance, and so you couldn't see what your subsidies might be or what your policies might be. And unfortunately, we still can't do that. We as journalists are dying to write about that and tell people exactly what they can expect. Fortunately, the administration sent us a spreadsheet of what the premium costs are this week, but they didn't include the subsidy information, so it's really not super good information for what people are going to pay out of pocket.
And we're going to tackle that coming up next here on the Florida Roundup. It's the prices and the plans of the Affordable Care Act. What are you finding on healthcare.gov? Send us a tweet at WLRN. Log on to the live chat at WLRN.org. It's the Florida Roundup, and it continues next. This is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, health insurance reform a reality now. On Tuesday, open enrollment began at healthcare.gov. That's the federally run state health insurance exchange for the state of Florida and the better part of more than two dozen other states participating. Amy Driscoll, editor at the Miami Herald, joining us. Kelly Kennedy with the Associated Press. Stacey Singer with the Palm Beach Post, also with us here on the Florida Roundup. Now, the strategy behind the health insurance reform law is to require most Americans to have health insurance or face a fine. The goal is to increase the number of young and healthy people, the so-called invincibles that we've been reporting about, to get that coverage, and thus that would spread the risk around for us who are maybe a little bit older and perhaps those who are also a little bit sicker. But 18-year-old Juan Hernandez is one of those young invincibles in South Florida who does not want to underwrite health care for older people.
We're buying into something that really we don't really need. There's like very few people who have problems with their health to the point where we have to go to the hospital so much.
Your questions on the Florida Roundup are always welcome. Email us at thefloridaroundup@wlrnnews.org. Call us 800-743-WLRN. Tweet us at the call sign at WLRN and the conversation live chat curated online with our web producer Lane Chen at WLRN.org. What's your experience trying out the online exchanges? Have you been successful in finding a price and a plan that fits your insurance needs? Amy, what do we know about the prices that people are finding, if and when they can find the prices?
Well, we know from the spreadsheet that Stacey mentioned before the break that what the premiums are for all the counties. And some of those, you know, are fairly inexpensive. You know, the catastrophic plan that they talk about, which is the kind of plan that's for people 30 and under, and it's really designed only if you end up in the hospital, pretty much. Those can be a little under $200 a month. For other people, it can be much higher than that. And for families, into the $600 and $700 number is what we're seeing. But none of that takes into account whether or not you get a subsidy. And that, of course, is the crux of the matter, because that could defray your cost enormously. So it's difficult for us to assess just how much people will pay.
Right.
The other thing that we don't know still is what the plans contain. And that's the thing that Stacey also mentioned. We're dying to talk about that.
We know we have 10 essential benefits, Kelly, that have to be included in all of the plans that are offered through the ACA and these health exchanges. But your reporting has found just a significant disparity in the prices, even locally, between the counties. Talk to us about that.
Well, and that's true, but we really don't know why the disparity yet.
First of all, how big is that disparity?
You know, we saw in several counties where you thought that, like Tampa area and Orlando area, you know, highly populated areas where you thought there was going to be enough competition to lower the prices. But we still saw for the mid-tier or the silver plan for a family of four, $700 and $800 a month, which is pretty high. Again, like Amy said, that doesn't take into account the subsidy, but you would think that where we're going to see the lower prices are in those 20 counties in Florida, the mostly rural ones, who only have one insurer to choose from. And so it's really hard right now, because we're not able to get on the website to find out all the details.
But it does get to the point of the number of options and the number of pricing options. On the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN on Monday, we spoke with the chairman and CEO of Florida Blue. Florida Blue, of course, is the largest private health insurer in the state of Florida. Florida Blue is offering ACA plans in all of the Florida counties via healthcare.gov. Pat Garrity told us that the company is actually, though, offering fewer health insurance options under the law compared to what it offered before the law.
I still think we'll have a wide range of offerings, but it just won't be as many as were available prior to the October 1st.
Does that limit the so-called elasticity of the pricing? In other words, there's fewer price levels to choose from for folks who are looking for insurance?
Yes, that's true. It is actually because there are fewer options, the pricing will be perhaps clearer because there will be less stratification of benefit levels and price. But, I think there'll be enough choice there for people to feel like they can pick a plan that lines up with their needs.
Fewer prices, meaning fewer price points. Stacey Singer with the Palm Beach Post, that is kind of economics 101, certainly. But talk to us about why we still can't see these prices and plans. I mean, is it a matter of just the website not working, or are these plans not fully articulated and fully formed?
Well, that's an interesting question. Florida's one of the only states in the country whose insurance commissioners made a decision that the memorandum that described these policies are trade secrets. So the insurance companies can't see what each other was offering up till October 1st. They couldn't see how they compared to the other companies. And unfortunately, neither could anybody else. So that's one of the big problems. It's not just technology.
Yeah. So right. So beyond the technology, what are we hearing from HHS, Amy and Kelly and Stacey? I mean, pop in here. When do we anticipate to be able to fully understand what this marketplace looks like for South Floridians?
Well, I think Kelly? When the website starts working again. I don't think it's an issue right now that the plans aren't ready and that they aren't fully articulated, because we do have some people in Florida that have enrolled in plans.
Yeah.
So they're there. We just can't get to them, which is frustrating.
The Kaiser Family Foundation has a calculator that is very sophisticated. They've developed it with actuaries, and they've gotten some state-specific information. And you can go on to kff.org and use their calculator and get a guesstimate of what the subsidies and the rates are going to be. I did that for a story in June, and I saw that it was the people with the pre-existing conditions who are going to be dropping to their knees and crying with joy, really.
In terms of the premiums that they're seeing.
It's going to change their lives.
Yeah.
People who've been charged, in some cases, $2,000 a month for insurance are suddenly going to be able to get it for $600, and that looks pretty darn good.
We've got a link to that calculator on our website with our live chat at WLRN.org, curated now by Rachel Morello. Join the conversation there. Also at 800-743-WLRN. Stacey Singer from the Palm Beach Post makes an interesting point there, that it's those folks with long-going health issues that may see a decent drop in the healthcare premium under the Affordable Care Act, but it's those young invincibles that the insurance companies want in the insured pool to spread the risk around that may see the biggest increase. And that's why we've seen some, and heard here on WLRN, seen on the Associated Press and the Palm Beach Post and the Miami Herald, some of that resistance from those young adults. We've got Chris joining us on the Florida Roundup from Miami on line 5. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks very much. Just wanted to comment on these brief spot interviews I keep hearing with young people who all claim that they're being forced to pay for something they don't get, which is health insurance. That's just simply false. If Juan Hernandez, whom you just interviewed, gets hit by a bus today,
yep,
he's going to be airlifted. First, a paramedic's going to come. Then he's going to be airlifted to Jackson. Then he's going to have a hospital stay and be provided medical care. And we're all going to pay for it. And that's a form of insurance that he's not paying for. And I believe Stacey just made the point that part of the bargain the insurance companies made for the Affordable Care Act was, we will increase our actuarial risk by not being able to gauge our pricing based on pre-existing conditions if you'll force these people who are now not being forced to pay anything to be part of the pool. So I think you have to honor that agreement.
Yep. Chris in Miami joining us here on the Florida Roundup. Amy, to Chris's point, trying to broaden that risk pool, but the negative, or the what economists call the disincentive not to get health insurance under this plan in 2014, it's very, very low. It's a fine or a tax. The Supreme Court did firm this as a tax. 1% of income or $95. Is that right?
Right. That's the first year, though, and it goes up considerably. And by 2016, it's, I think, $600 and something. So, you know,
I'd argue even that's only a quarter of a year's worth of premiums. So even that may not be enough.
Right, right. But I do think that there's a re-education process here that Chris rightly points up, which is that people who say they don't need insurance and are actually getting the benefits of it when they need it in a crisis without paying for it.
That's right. Marty here joining us from Coconut Creek on the Florida Roundup. Marty, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. How are you? What can we do for you?
Great. Well, I wanted to give a different perspective. I first want to just clarify it by stating that I completely support health care for all. However, I really think that this has been terribly misrepresented. You're only hearing about either poor people who will be getting subsidies or people who have had pre-existing conditions and been paying, as one of your people said, $2,000, and they may now find plans a lot less. I'll tell you, I'm a middle-aged single male with no health histories. I've had a Blue Cross Blue Shield individual plan. This year, it's costing me $364 a year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a middle-of-the-road.
Marty, $364 a month, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And that's a $5,000 deductible. It's somewhere, in any event, to make a long story short, I was not able to get onto healthcare.gov yet, but I was able to get onto Blue Cross's shield, site directly, and the comparable plan for me now will be about over $600 a month. That's for a comparable plan. So, you know, we keep hearing all of the positives, but we're not hearing the drawbacks, and I'm sure there are going to be plenty of people in my boat who, listen, I thought maybe $50 a month extra to help support, get all of these other people subsidies, but that's going to bankrupt me. We're not talking about something that's affordable.
Marty,
$600 a month.
Marty,
yes.
Joining us from Coconut Creek with his perspective on the Affordable Care Act. Kelly, not finding it that necessarily affordable. Stacey, go ahead.
He should remember that when he goes and if he goes right to Blue Cross, he's not going to get the subsidy he's entitled to. If he buys it through the exchange, he's almost certainly going to get a subsidy of some sort, unless he's in the top, you know.
Right. The subsidy is completely income based, so it's not so much he may be entitled to it. We don't know what the income level is, of course, that he has.
True. And the other point I'd like to say is the plans this year are not. You can't really compare them to last year's plans. They're required to cover significantly more. There are caps on the out-of-pocket on how much if you get seriously ill next year, your out-of-pocket expenses will be limited at around $6,500. So you can't go bankrupt because of limits on your coverage.
And Amy, that was the point with the interview that we had with Pat Garrity of Florida Blue, pointing out, in fact, that they are offering fewer plans, in part because of the 10 essential items, 10 essential coverage items. What do those include under this ACA that they have to include all these plans?
Well, it's things like hospitalization, prescription coverage, things that aren't necessarily covered in some of these bare bones plans today. And it's the kind of thing that you don't want to discover when you're going to the hospital, that your coverage is minimal and you have to spend a whole lot more out of pocket than you expected. But one thing I'd like to say about that caller also is that he may also be in a grandfathered plan. And a lot of the insurance agents in the past year or so have been telling people on the individual market that if you lock in a plan right now that is considered a grandfathered plan, it's been around long enough, you can just keep your rate. So he might want to check that out as well.
Sam here joins us from Oakland Park. Sam is a member of our Public Insight Network here on WLRN Miami Herald News. Sam, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Hi, thank you.
What are you seeing from your perspective? You're an insurance broker. You're standing in between the insurance coverage and the insured or uninsured shopping for these plans. What's your experience?
Well, I'm euphoric about the way things are going, other than the fact that we can't get into the system and actually apply. I've had probably more than 20 appointments so far. I've got 70-some appointments set up, but people are looking at the plans and they're very excited, very happy.
Sam, have you undergone the navigator training?
I had, as a broker, I had to take training to sell on the exchange. Yes.
Right, right. Okay. And you're finding, are your clients currently insured, or are they uninsured coming to the market for the first time?
I have everything. I have at least six people paying over $2,000 a month for their insurance because of their pre-existing conditions. I have uninsured people who are making just over the poverty level who are going to get insurance for pretty much nothing.
Thanks to the subsidy that they're going to be encountering based upon their income levels.
And all the plans are available online. It's just that you can't get them through the healthcare.gov. You can go to Blue Cross and Blue Shield. You can go to United Healthcare. You can go to Humana, Cigna, they all the plans are online. They so you can see all the plans. You can see the prices because they're going to be the same price on the exchange or on the marketplace as they are
Sam,
in our website.
We may be adding to a little bit of confusion here, so let's kind of clear this up, because what the previous caller, Marty, had said is he went to Florida Blue and looked for the plan that was going to be included on the ACA. And Kelly, correct me if I'm wrong here, and his thought was he saw the plan and saw the price. The question is that price is the above the fold price, not the price
it
that...
It doesn't include the subsidy.
If he's eligible for it.
It does not include the subsidy, but you can go to the Kaiser subsidy calculator and take that plan and work out the numbers using that plan. So, I mean, you can kind of get an idea of what you're going to pay with a subsidy.
All right. We've got Sam joining us from Oakland Park, an insurance broker here, trying to navigate the Affordable Care Act as open enrollment began in the state of Florida with the federally run State Insurance Exchange. On Tuesday, our guests include Amy Driscoll from the Miami Herald, Kelly Kennedy from the Associated Press, Stacey Singer from the Palm Beach Post, also with us. I am Tom Hudson. Join that conversation on WLRN.org, the live chat curated by Rachel Morello. Give us a call at 800-743-WLRN or tweet us at WLRN is our call sign on Twitter. Lots of questions about coverage, lots of concerns about what may be covered and what may not be covered. Jill joins us from Coral Springs. Jill, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Hi, thank you. Basically, I had a question about the deductible. I was on the website the first day, and I was on there for maybe about an hour and a half. And for what I could afford to pay per month, it looked like most of my deductible choices would be $5,000 or $10,000. And so that's what I have to pay out first before any insurance kicks in. Is that right?
Well, you're asking a group of journalists a significant insurance question, and one of the problems that we've in fact voiced here, Jill, goes to exactly this point, is we've been unable to see the exact nature of some of these plans. Generally speaking, and ladies, correct me if I'm wrong, that usually is an out-of-pocket expense that tends to be the risk that the insured, in this case, Jill, you would take in order to get the kind of premium level monthly payment that you're looking to get. And guys, we've heard this phrase about the metals plans here. Platinum, which is traditionally a high monthly premium, low deductible, so something that's significantly lower than, Jill, what you're talking about, all the way down to the bronze plan, which is, in other words, called the catastrophic plan, which would give that basic coverage, Amy, that you spoke about, the 10 essential benefits, at a relatively low premium, but a high out-of-pocket expense. And that's basically the theory here, Amy, isn't it?
Right, yeah. I mean, the plans are rated based on the cost-sharing. Bronze would be 60-40. The person being insured would pick up 40%. But there's a cap on that, and there's a cap on you know, sort of your what you would end up spending in the end. But like I said, we have not been able to get on there to actually look at the details of the plan, and we think that's one of the critical ways that people are going to make the decision.
Yeah, and it's the complexities here of the deductible, and then, of course, there's copays on top of that that one has to consider. And then, as we've mentioned, you've got the above-the-fold price, premium price, that you may be able to see on some of these insurance websites, but that may not include, and does not include in all likelihood, the subsidy that one may be eligible for, depending upon one's income level. Again, the online chat continuing to go and grow at WLRN.org. Elaine Chen joins us now from the control room for an update on the chat.
Yeah, we have a comment from Julian Sula, who tweeted us saying that on day four, the healthcare exchange still down, as a software developer, he can say that he's sure that this is nothing to do about the traffic. And then we also got a comment on our website from CE, who says he or she gave up on the website after waiting for so long and then called the 800 number and was told that the application would be mailed. So CE writes that now it'll be a couple of weeks probably going that route. And meanwhile, I'm still looking at that wait screen.
Elaine Chen joining us for some of the digital conversation ongoing here for the Florida Roundup on WLRN. Stacey, when you hear that from a software developer, presumably somebody who knows a thing or two about these kinds of complex projects here, what are you hearing from your technology sources? Is this something that is going to be able to be fixed in real time, in time for folks still to take advantage of this open enrollment period between now and the first of the year? And I believe it runs out essentially December 15th if you want coverage to begin January 1st.
Well, one reader suggested that they just
shut it down for 1 week to fix all of the technical problems. If you stop and think about the connectivity required from this system, it's not just connecting to the 36 states that it's facilitating. It's connecting to the insurance companies. It's connecting to the various government agencies involved in verifying citizenship and residency and income and VA eligibility. And so the connectivity issues can be huge, but I'm told that when it comes to basic system things like having sort of firewalls that stop a page from getting overloaded, if those aren't structured exactly right, that can bring the system to its knees too.
Yeah, is the capacity built in? Did they build this with the capacity anticipated for 36 states to take advantage of this, and you know, upwards of 4 million Floridians, let alone all the 35 other states and uninsured who may want to participate?
You know, when I was on an early press call months ago with administration officials, and it was becoming clear that Florida had zero interest in developing its own exchange, I heard audible groans from them because Florida has the second largest population of uninsured in the country. And they knew that this was going to severely tax what they were trying to do.
Yeah, that's behind California. And California, of course, has its own state-run exchange run by the state of California. So it's not part of this federally run exchange.
Right.
And we should point out the Spanish language version of healthcare.gov. Amy, what's the update there? That did not launch on October 1st, did it?
No. It's going to be, they're saying, maybe 2 weeks. But that came out the Friday before the launch on the Tuesday. That and the removal of the small business exchange, which was pushed back to November 1st,
November
is what
1st,
they're
yeah.
saying.
Yeah.
So, you know, those were some early signs that we were looking at some trouble here. I think we were all kind of prepared for it. I don't think we were prepared for people to not get on the site at all. And one thing that I think that consumers are saying now is, you know, the government had more than 3 years to prepare for this, and I feel their pain on that. But I also think that there was no real way to beta test this in a way that, you know, with the number of people that were involved.
Yeah. Stacey, any update on the Spanish language digital interface?
No, there's been no word on it at all. The only thing that I've heard is that the community groups are being given the paper applications.
Can I just say, in the problem...
Kelly Kennedy, AP, go ahead.
The problem with the paper applications, though, it's not like you fill that out and, okay, you're signed up. You fill that out and it gets sent in, and then it takes however many weeks to tell what plans you're eligible for, and then
right.
you still have to choose. So it's really adding a lot of time to the process for the navigators and for the consumer, because they now have to make contact with them twice.
The paper application
right.
is essentially the analog way of just going on and creating an account online.
Exactly.
It doesn't do anything with actually shopping.
You're not enrolled until you've paid your first premium, and that first premium has to be paid by December 15. Now, if you miss that deadline, you'll just be enrolled in February, I guess, instead of January. But if you want coverage January 1st, December 15 is your deadline.
That's Stacey Singer from the Palm Beach Post, Kelly Kennedy from the Associated Press, and Amy Driscoll from the Miami Herald. Join me. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. Lots more to come. The subsidy. Who is eligible for it? How does it work? Plus, the language of health insurance reform. It's the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. We are concentrating on the Affordable Care Act. Open enrollment for Obamacare began this week in the state of Florida and nationwide. We've got a panel of experts. Amy Driscoll from the Miami Herald has been editing a number of its healthcare coverage in the newspaper over the past several months. Kelly Kennedy writing about it statewide from here in Florida and Miami from the Associated Press, and Stacey Singer covering it for the Palm Beach Post. You can join us as well at 800-743-9576 or that online chat at WLRN.org. So we've talked about the subsidy, ladies. We now need to get into the heart of it. Amy, what do we know about who's eligible for the subsidy? What are the guidelines?
Well, in the state of Florida, it's for people who make between 100% of the poverty level, the federal poverty level, and 400%. Because we did not expand Medicaid in the state, the people below 100% of the poverty level are not eligible for subsidies, and that's what we're calling those people, the gap people, and there's some 995,000 of them in Florida, which is really kind of runs counter to the whole idea of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
But for those who do qualify for a subsidy, the idea is that you would not pay, I think it's 9.5%, no more than 9.5% of your income for a plan. So it's based against a mid-level plan, a silver plan, the second lowest silver plan in your county, and that's how it's calculated. It's a pretty complicated calculation, and that's one of the reasons that people have been using the Kaiser calculator to do that.
Yeah, Kelly, do we have any idea how many Floridians may be eligible to take advantage of this subsidy?
Florida has about 3.5 million uninsured in the state, and about half of those, we're hearing estimates, could be eligible for a federal subsidy. But it varies so much on your income, where you live, what plan you choose, if you smoke, your age, mm-hmm. your family size. So there's going to be a wide disparity on who, you know, how much you're going to get.
And Stacey, this is part of the technological problems that we've seen here, is the communication here isn't just through the Health and Human Services Department, which is running healthcare.gov. You also have to be able to access all this IRS data so that the government can figure out whether or not you are truly eligible for the subsidy.
Right. It's just a hurry up and wait right now. And hopefully the technological problems are going to get solved quickly. If not, I'm not sure. I think we might hear the president coming back with some sort of compromise proposal to delay things or extend open enrollment. I think that could happen politically.
We've got Ed here joining us from Boca Raton on the Florida Roundup. Ed, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Great show.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm 61 years old, and I have my own little business that I do, and the income on it fluctuates wildly. It's an arts and crafts business, and during the summer we don't have any shows, but now, as of this weekend, I'll be very busy with them. But, of course, next year, because I'll be 62, I'll be able to collect my Social Security early, and my income will kind of flatten out, so what? So my question was, for the purposes of the subsidy, when I put in my application, will it be based on this year's income or next year's income when the plan is in effect?
So the question here from Ed in Boca Raton for our Florida Roundup panel is, which calendar year is the income eligible for? And these are the kinds of questions that we've been unable to get real significant answers. Kelly,
I can help.
Stacey,
with that,
do you have
actually
an idea here?
I do, because it's interesting. They want you to project what your income's going to be next year, and they want you to base it on that. But the HHS also has a contract with Equifax, and they are checking. They're doing income verification from previous years to see if it's in the ballpark, that if the subsidy they're giving you appears to be the right one. And I think that's a pretty opaque process, but they're asking you to make a projection for next year's income.
And there's an interesting twist on that. We had a story out of our Washington Bureau. If you happen to fall into like the very low end, just above 100% of poverty level, and you overestimate your income, there's probably not, or maybe just under it, you overestimate your income to get in that category to get a subsidy, there's probably nothing that the government's going to probably do to you. If you underestimate to get into it, they're probably going to come after you. That's kind of what we've been talking about. And it's an odd place for Florida, because you have to be within 100% and 400% to get a subsidy. But if you're below, the poorest of the poor probably aren't going to get a lot of help.
But let's just throw out two figures for listeners. It's if you're a single person and you're making below around $46,000 a year, you're going to qualify for a subsidy most likely. And if you're a family of four, I think it's around $94,000
right.
a year.
Those are the income limits.
Those
anything
are the
below
two numbers,
that, you
anything
get a
below that, and you should qualify for a subsidy.
That's Kelly Kennedy from the Associated Press, Amy Driscoll from the Miami Herald, and Stacey Singer from Palm Beach Post joining me, Tom Hudson, here on the Florida Roundup. And Gabriel has joined us as well on the phone from Miami. Gabriel, go ahead.
Hey, Tom. I called because I'm one of the Invincibles you guys talk about, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm Invincible, right? I'm like 26, but my back is really messed up. So I do have insurance, but my deductibles are so high that I'm not able to get like I've been suffering, you know?
What's a high deductible to you, Gabriel?
Well, for me, $5,000 is a little high, because to get an epidural shot, which would help the back, it's about $4,000 for one shot. So it's kind of hard for me to do that. And I heard the other Invincible talk about, why should he get something like that? And from where I'm sitting, like, I would encourage anybody my age to do it, you know?
Gabriel, 26 years old in Miami, suffering from a bad back, one of those maybe Vincibles, Amy, not an invincible. He has seen his mortality there, and that's a kind of insurance story, obviously, that we're going to be hearing over the next several months. You know, we also got a post, I believe it's on the website here, criticizing our conversation over the past hour or so, saying we're unfairly using talking points to support the Affordable Care Act. I will point out, feel free to engage us in a debate specifically about what we have said, which is infactual or false, and we'd be happy to have that conversation. But that kind of comment here, ladies, really, it strikes me as how overloaded this policy debate is when it comes to politics. And in fact, just the language of health insurance reform that we've seen so extra hot over the last several months, the law's official title, will remind everybody, the Patient Protection and the Affordable Care Act. Many of us, and I'm guilty of this, have referred to it as Obamacare, as the president has.
A part of the Affordable Care Act, health care reform, also known as Obamacare. By the way, you know what? Let me tell you. I have no problem with folks saying Obamacares. I do care.
So the president has embraced this nickname that we've used, but this really may be part of the challenge. And ABC's late night TV host Jimmy Kimmel had his own unique take on it this week.
The polls show that most Americans say they don't like Obamacare, but they love what's in it when it all gets broken down. It's like the opposite of a McNugget.
So you disagree with Obamacare?
Yes, I do.
Do you think insurance companies should be able to exclude people with pre-existing conditions?
No.
Do you agree that young people should be able to stay on their parents' plans until they are 26?
They should be able to, yes.
Do you agree that companies with 50 or more employees should provide health care?
I do.
And so by that logic, you would be for the Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
Do you think Obamacare is socialist?
Yes, I do.
Do you think the Affordable Care Act is socialist?
No.
And of course, that's from Jimmy Kimmel, and it really highlights here, Amy and Kelly and Stacey, that language matters in this. It is so overhot, and the rhetoric is so red hot here. Amy, have you had discussions with the Miami Herald about whether or not to use that nickname, the Obamacare?
Yeah, we have. That's a very funny bit that he did. And it highlights the issue, though. At first, because Obamacare was considered something of a slur, we did not use it. We used the name of the act. And then when the president himself said that it was, okay with him, we thought, well, okay, if both sides are going to use this, we will use it, too, since it is the term that most people understand. But I think there are some people who still think it's politically loaded to use that term. Sure. So we kind of try to do both.
Yeah. Kelly, what have you encountered at the Associated Press and as well as encountered when you speak to folks who are shopping for health insurance?
The Associated Press does not like to use the word Obamacare, and as recently as this week even put out an all-staff memo saying that, and they prefer the term healthcare overhaul. But I think this is just me personally speaking, that's a confusing term. That's not what your average citizen and reader understands. I was out canvassing this week door-to-door with Enroll America, and we were knocking on doors, and people would open the door and they would say, hi, I'm here to talk to you about affordable health insurance. And you could kind of see their eyes glaze over, and then they would say, Obamacare? And their eyes would light up. They would instantly, the light went on, it clicked, and they knew what it meant. If this is the term that people are using and are relating with, then I don't know, do we have some sort of obligation to
use it as well? Stacey, one of my beefs is calling this health reform. It's health insurance reform. This is not health reform in my mind.
Yes and no. If you look at the payment reforms that are happening to hospital providers and the changes that are happening in the way Medicare analyzes costs and pays for care through value-based purchasing, it's reforming and touching every sector of the health industry.
Stacey Singer from the Palm Beach Post, Kelly Kennedy from the Associated Press, and Amy Driscoll from the Miami Herald, all here tackling the Affordable Care Act, tackling Obamacare, tackling health reform, health insurance reform here on the Florida Roundup. Thank you, ladies, for all of your insights and sharing them with us and our audience here today. That is the Florida Roundup for this Friday, October 4th, a rebroadcast back on the radio tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., and on the website as well at WLRN.org. The program is produced by Elaine Shannon and Alicia Zuckerman. Our public insight network analyst is Steph Farrow, executive producer for the station, Peter J. Meritz, our technical supervisor, Paul Leary. South Florida Arts Beat with Ed Bell is next, and a conversation with the Miami City Ballet Artistic Director, Lourdes Lopez. Monday morning at 9 a.m. on the Sunshine Economy, government jobs under pressure. I'm Tom Hudson. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.